Good morning, dear listeners, and welcome to the Sunday morning podcast of the First Universalist Unitarian Church of Wausau. I am delighted that you are joining us this morning, and I welcome you near and far. My name is Brian Mason, and I'm the minister of this congregation. I invite all of you now to join in a spirit of worship wherever you are, whether that be on a run or in your living room or sitting next to someone you love on your couch at home. You're welcome to follow along this service in the order of service that we emailed to you and also posted on our Facebook page. And right now, we're about to read our chalice lighting. And the words begin and go, "We light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the fire of commitment. We light this symbol of our faith as we gather together." So deep in most of our hearts, at least in my mind, is an adventurer. So adventure and wanderlust capture our imaginations. Though I can't say why for certain, I have some guesses. Maybe it's encoded deep in our DNA, or maybe it's found way down there in that reptilian part of our brains that tells us to search and run and wander. Maybe it's an inferiority complex in some of us, the remains of whenever we were teenagers, when all we wanted to do was leave our parents' house and our boring hometowns, right? Maybe it's all those stories of our ancestors who left their native lands to brave God knows what, to create something new. Or maybe it's that there's a part of ourselves that we just can't stand. And so we wish to transform ourselves in some profound and spiritual way. Maybe some of us are searching for a mother or a father or for ourselves. Or maybe it's just plain curiosity. It could be that you want to be free or that you want to escape. It could be a million other reasons, of course. But I'm going to bet that on some level, every single one of us searches. And every single one of us leaves. It's like all we ever do is leave. That's what the Indigo Girls would tell us. In their song, Leaving, they sing these wonderful words. But the more I go, the less I know. Will the fire still burn on my return? Keep the path lit on the only road I know. Because honey, all I know to do is go. But there's more than one way to go, of course. Some of us have been known to go far away, without ever physically traveling anywhere. You can be trapped in a dead-end job as your heart has already fled to some dream of a better tomorrow. Or you can be a child sitting in your very own bedroom and you can resemble the child that your parents tell you that you are. And yet deep inside of you can be these angels and demons that have made you a stranger, even to yourself. Or you can lie in bed at night and yet be a million miles away from the partner who is lying right there next to you. You can be the friend who shows up to parties and exercise classes and questions why as you hide it behind a smile and you wonder to yourself, who am I? We leave because we're looking for something or someone. We leave because we long for something else or for something more. Many of us leave because we're searching for a piece of us that feels as though it's missing. Or we set out on the road because we hope that out there we'll find what it is we're actually searching for. Or at a minimum, out there on the road, we'll be able to distract ourselves from all those pains and hungers and absences that made us want to leave in the very first place. And the road is an exciting place. It promises adventure, and in my experience, the road often delivers that excitement. And people have been telling stories and making movies about the road for centuries, right? You go all the way back to Homer's Odyssey about Odysseus's long journey home. And then moving into the contemporary, you've got Jack Kerouac's On the Road, and it tells the story of Sal and Dean and their adventures and carnal exploration, right? And there's the great movie Selma and Louise and Easy Rider and Toy Story for the kids and E.T. for the older kids. There are the stories in the Psalms about spiritual pilgrims journeying to Zion and tales about pilgrims making the Hajj to Mecca. There are the stories of the Buddha, who left behind royalty and riches, no less, to meditate in poverty under trees. And there are the stories of this, our very own great nation, that was founded by a pilgrim wandering people. We can see evidence of our restless hearts in today's statistics that detail how Americans live and work these days. So get this, on average, Americans will have 11 jobs over the course of their lives. And they will relocate at least, this is the minimum number, at least 11 times. So decades ago, the psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud noticed this tendency to want to wander and go. And he created this German term, Umheimlich. And whenever you translate Umheimlich, what it means roughly is not at homeness. So human beings, I would argue, are sort of constantly not at home in Freud's sense. We're always on the move on some level. We're restless, right? We chase something at times, and sometimes we'll chase anything. Some of us, it's almost as if we have convinced ourselves that this is how we want to live, right? That the road and the search is what life is actually all about. I used to have this bag from a church that I attended back in St. Louis, where I originate from, and what it said is the name of the church, and it said, the search is the answer, right? But it's this idea that the road is life, this constant search, is actually what it means to arrive. And I want to admit that there is freedom in this desire to want to go constantly, be on the move. The benefit of believing is that the road is life, is that whatever you decide that you want to run from, or what you were actually running from, whenever that finds you, all you have to do is you just pick up and leave all over again. So maybe some of you have seen this. There's a recent film about humankind's restlessness, and it's entitled Up in the Air. It's a great movie starring a great actor, George Clooney, and he plays this character named Ryan Bingham. And so Bingham has zero attachments. And what his greatest dream is, I didn't know people could have this dream, but this character does have this dream. His greatest dream is to be a million miler. And for those of you who don't know what a million miler is someone who has flown in a plane for a million miles or more. And so Bingham's job is that he's a motivational speaker. And what he does whenever he travels to these places is he urges people. He says, live for yourselves. You need to make your own pleasure the focus of your life. You need to free yourself from relationships or anything else that imposes unnecessary responsibilities that might hold you back from this pursuit of pleasure and traveling and adventure. But along the way, somewhere along the way, Bingham is challenged by someone who sort of observed him from afar. And they've seen him live this jet-setter lifestyle of absolute total freedom. He hooks up with whoever he wants to hook up with. He goes wherever he wants to go, hence the million miles. But one day this coworker asks Bingham, she says, what do you even want? Here's his answer. He kind of doesn't have one. And so later on the plane, it's getting exciting now, we see Bingham on board the plane, and he knows that he's going to reach his millionth mile, and he's traveling somewhere to preach this gospel of rootlessness. When it finally happens, he logs his 1,000,000th mile. And so the plane's captain leaves the cockpit and comes out and congratulates him. You know, wonderful job flying all these miles, Mr. Bingham. And the captain is curious, of course, about this million miler. There aren't many people who fly a million miles. And so the captain asks, he says, sir, where are you from? And Bingham thinks for a minute. And see, he's thinking, and he goes, well, I'm from here. And then you see this pain on his face and this realization. He's sort of a resident of nowhere. In fact, he's sort of like the living embodiment of a restless heart. This sort of modern desire to want to just pursue pleasure and freedom as ends in themselves. But what the film does is it asks us to consider this question. Is limitless freedom really what matters? What it does is it asks us if maybe there is more to life than the sum of all of our desires. It's sort of a religious question, right? You hear this similar kind of question in the pages of the Bible, in the Quran, and in the words of the Buddha. And you especially see these kinds of questions and these kinds of topics discussed by people who are dying. I sort of wonder, could it be that we tell ourselves that this never-ending quest for freedom and ambition for more is really just a deeper longing to go home, to find a place where we can really be ourselves? Where we can truly rest. I sometimes wonder if we convince ourselves that adventure and the search is the point and purpose of life, when really what we just want to do is we want to walk up to that door, any door, and we knock, and someone opens it up, and they know us, and they welcome us in, and they embrace us, and they give us a familiar kiss. So the 5th century theologian, maybe you've heard of him before, St. Augustine. So this was a man no stranger to life on the road. And what he would do is he would eventually come to identify happiness, not with adventure and freedom, which is certainly what our culture tells us happiness is. What Augustine would say is what happiness really is finding rest. So Augustine's Confessions, if you've ever read it before, it's essentially a travel log. What it does is it maps a person's, in this case Augustine's, it maps his heart. What it does is it tells the story of a man who is in search of the same things our culture tells us to look for today. What does our culture tell us we want? Just watch any commercial and you'll find out. It tells us to search for money and knowledge and pleasure and sexual desirability and likes, of course, or followers. But like many of us, Augustine, he would question the messages that a culture is attempting to instill. He started to question the things like, should we really try and avoid looking old? Can we really pull ourselves up by these bootstraps and just figure everything else out on our own? Is it really true that everything we have, we deserve? Is it true that we should just be able to swipe left whenever someone is ugly or they annoy us? He also questioned if success itself really does free us from the responsibility of having to say, I'm sorry. But in the midst of Augustine's pursuit of prestige, right whenever fame and riches were right within Augustine's grasp. He had this realization, which the philosopher Jamie Smith describes like this, and I'm going to give a little quote. The philosopher writes, "Humans are those strange creatures who can never be fully satisfied with anything that's been created." End quote. The truth of the matter is that there is nothing on this planet that you can buy or make that will fill whatever void or longing you have. If it's a father or a mother you seek, there will never be any amount of money or sex that will ever take the place of the love you long for. See, when we try and convince ourselves that the road is life, all we do is we try to cram the infinite into the finite, and we all know that life is utterly finite. The only way we can experience joy along the journey is if we know where home is. So the beautiful thing about Augustine's confession is that he admits that he's imperfect. How many saints admit that they're imperfect? He did. He also admits that inside of his heart is doubt and pain and brokenness. He says in plain language, and this is a direct quote, "I struggle every single day." There's no veneer that he tries to hide behind. At the heart of the Confessions, Augustine declares that his restless life, getting absorbed in the busyness and chatter in the world, was nothing more than an attempt to numb him to the truth that we all know. Everyone, and I mean everyone, longs for something truly meaningful. So I used to be a hospital chaplain for years before I became a parish minister. And what I would do quite often, actually, is I would sit with people in the final days of their life. And over and again, they would tell me that all they wanted to do was die at home. And so the only thing I could do is I could help them imagine what it would be like to be home. And so as they would lay on their deathbeds, I would ask them to close their eyes, and I would say, "Paint me a picture of home." And they would. And they would imagine what their backyards looked like. And in their backyards would be birds and bugs and wind. And then they would walk me inside their homes, and in there would be cats and dogs that wander up and down the hallways. And in the kitchen and bedrooms would be people who knew their names, people who would call out to them and answer, and people who would hold their hands and kiss their lips. What these people showed me is that all of us are looking for an identity, a story in which we are truly known, where we can be called by our names and where we have a home. But the point of telling our story isn't to show other people how unique or special we are. The point of telling our stories serves a different function. So the great writer, Leslie Jamison, she came to this realization when, after struggling with alcoholism, she decided that she wanted to get sober. And so for years, Jamison had poured herself into writing stories that would garner glowing reviews, and she would achieve critical acclaim. But sitting in a recovering meeting one day, it dawned on Jamison that every story she was trying to say was essentially saying this. It said, "Look at me." But in a circle of other people in recovery, what Jamison realized is that the story of our lives actually should serve a different end. That the stories of our lives and the stories we tell should try and weave a web of solidarity. I'm going to quote from her for just a moment. "The point wasn't to draw attention to the storyteller. The hope was to give a gift to listeners, to create a world in which listeners could see themselves or even orient themselves and maybe even see a way forward or a way out." In recovery, Jamison recalls, "I found a community that resist what I'd always been told about stories, that stories had to be unique. What I suggest is that instead, a story was most useful when it wasn't unique at all, when it understood itself as something that had been lived before and would be lived again." So what is Jamison getting at? The gift of sharing our stories is that in them, someone might find a bit of themselves in our own lives, and we just might find a bit of ourselves in theirs. To have an identity is to know that you have been written into the story of someone else's life. All those dying people in the hospital, they didn't tell me stories about how much they achieved. This is what they did. They counted the ways in which their life was woven into the lives of the people they loved the most. And so at its most fundamental, I want to suggest to you this morning that the church itself, is a collection of stories. And these stories have been woven together under one sacred banner. And so this faith, Unitarian Universalism, that we practice, what it does is it brings us into a circle of people who together are weaving a web of solidarity. So this place, this house of faith, it asks us to listen with new ears and to see with new eyes the ways in which we find a piece of ourselves in someone else's story, and how someone can maybe see a bit of themselves in the story of our own lives. And so you find this in kitchens and sanctuaries and over coffee and around dinner tables. What happens? We hear stories about people who live now and all those people we never met who lived long ago. And on Sundays, what do? We tell ourselves stories about saints and monks and nuns and knuckleheads, let's not leave them out, who set out on journeys to discover the truth of what it means to be free, what it means to be alive, what it means to love, what it means to long and work for justice. In bits and pieces, we see ourselves in the stories others tell. And so the reason why we strive to be the church is because in the end, what we are doing is writing a letter to someone who we may never meet. A letter that says what? Never give up. That there is a river flowing in your soul and that there is always more love somewhere. In that letter, we are telling a collective story about what it means to love, a world that will never give us all the answers we seek. And in that letter, we comfort those people by telling them that sometimes we were fools too. We admit that most of us never found everything we were looking for. But within these walls, within this faith, we found a prayer spoken by people who seemed to know us without ever having met us. And what does that prayer say? It says what parents say and pray for their children. It says what children whisper back to their parents as they lay their bodies to rest. It says what the church asks of everyone who takes up the mantle of grace and love and justice, and it's this: with a restless heart, let me become the person you've made me want to be. Let me turn out to be the person you've inspired me to want to be. A restless heart comes from a desire to live, to know love, to be happy. It comes from our most human cravings and our most human longings. But joy comes to us only who have found rest. Rest in the gift of friendship, rest in the gift of belonging. Rest in the gift that there is only so far we can go before we come to an end that asks us to give ourselves over to something bigger than we are. As Fred Buechner put it, by the laws of logic, to give yourself away in love to another would seem to mean that you end up with less of yourself than you had to begin with. But the miracle is that the reverse is true. To give yourself away in love to somebody else is to become for the first time yourself. You see, little by little, finding home is the same thing as becoming human, becoming whole, and becoming truly loving and lovely at last. Amen. Please join in singing Spirit of Life.